You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft.
Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Welcome
to Theater Geeks Anonymous,
the podcast about Broadway flops, scandals, and new work.
I'm your host, Ebony Vines.
And I'm your host, Pamela Shandro.
Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the Theater Geeks Anonymous podcast
on the Broadway Podcast Network and all your favorite podcast listening apps.
Thank you.
Gotta clear the old pipes out. Welcome.
What's up, theater geeks?
What is up?
Welcome to the show. I mean, it hasn't even been that long, but you know, it's the weather changes. I think, man. It's the allergies.
Totally. That is absolutely what it is. I'm not sick. It literally is just, there's been a frog living in my throat for the last several weeks that sometimes I have to evict and then he comes right back.
The worst.
It's terrible.
The worst. Yeah.
But like, okay. And I guess we shouldn't really complain. I was talking to a coworker about this. This is the first year in a very long time that we've actually had a spring. And our spring, like the spring has been very long. So every flower has erupted from the earth. Yeah. There are daffodils and crocus and tulips everywhere, right? But that also means an influx of pollen and other, you know, environmental allergens in the air. Yeah.
There's a cherry blossom tree that's like walking distance between Pamela and I. Like if I were to walk to her house, I'd have to pass it. And it's done the two cherry blossom color. So it was pink.
Yeah.
All the pink ones fell off and now all the white ones are on. And I'm like, that is a lot of pollen.
Yeah, a lot of pollen.
Yeah.
And there's already there. We have those kind of trees and I don't know what they're called, but they're the kind of trees that like any gust of wind and just a plume of green powder.
Yeah.
Like yellowish green powder comes off and it coats the cars.
Yeah.
And it coats everything. I have no idea what kind of tree that is, but those will normally make their appearance, but then summer turns and it's gone, right? Well, not this time because spring has been elongated. And we've also had these several days of like just heavy winds.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, you can't win. And I'm wearing a mask too, still.
Yeah. Same.
Still gets same. In there. What do you know? Do?
I know. Oh, well, I am okay with this weather because it's not super hot.
Right.
And it's still a little too crispy for the bugs to show themselves.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's when I start hating warm weather is the moment the bugs come out. Mm-hmm. And then it's like I have to wear bug spray to go to the bodega around the corner. And I'm not here for that.
Well, and it's not just bug spray. Like I'm also like I always wear.
You also need sunscreen.
Exactly. Like I always wear it on my face. That's easy. But like then I have to slather my everything else that's showing.
Yeah.
And it's summer, so it's hot. So I've got a lot showing and it's just the grossest. Like you're hot and sweaty and they're also sticky. And then you've got to spray bug spray on top of that. It's like
nasty.
I hate it.
I don't like it either.
I simply do not like summer.
No, me neither. One of my friends told me, you know, there is something that's the opposite of seasonal affect.
Seasonal, yeah.
Yeah. And so like for people like us who hate summer, Mm-hmm. Like there is a seasonal affect disorder, like for us, because yeah. I can't say I get depressed, but I do get like serious anxiety in June.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, it's coming. And I'm really scared about it. And then the bug bites start and it's hot. And I get a lot of anxiety. And then I battle like pretty severe anxiety on and off for like the rest of the summer.
Okay.
And then it goes away like at around like late August, it goes away.
I don't get anxious. I get angry.
Yeah.
I have a hard time controlling my anger. Like I turn into a toddler. I don't want to go outside. It's hot. I don't feel good. I don't like it. It's that kind of, it's awful. But it's true. And I can see it. I can hear myself saying these things, but I cannot stop it because my body is just so uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. So for, I know we're in the minority, like so many people love summer, but then I get annoyed because those same people have the nerve to complain. And I'm like, I don't want to hear you.
You don't get to speak
because you've been complaining about fall and winter. So you know what? Yeah. Get those bug bites, get sunburnt. This is what you asked for. So I don't want to hear it. I get to complain because I have told you I hate this from jump. So, but you don't get to complain because you said this is what you wanted. So suck it up and deal with it. That's how I feel about people who say they like summer.
Suck it up, buttercup.
Yeah. You said you like this nonsense.
I will say there are a few things that I like about summer. One being that the honeysuckle is in bloom and it smells delicious.
Yeah. Honeysuckle smell great.
But that's about it.
I know.
And I will say I also do like being able to leave the house with fewer steps. Like I don't have to wear a scarf, hat, coat, boots, all of that. And the dogs don't have to wear their coats. So like we can just grab the leashes and go.
Right.
But even then, I don't think that's enough of a motivation for me to like really enjoy myself.
I know. I know. I mean, the one thing that like helps my anxiety is looking forward to Shakespeare in the Park. Cause in the before times I did that every summer.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're going to let us line up and I stink at winning the lottery. So who knows if I'll get to go. And if that's taken away from me, what is there for the summer? Like, screw you, summer. You've taken the one thing I enjoy.
I know, right? Are they still doing like Broadway and Bryant Park?
I don't know, but that's like the middle of the day when I work. So that's like, I can't enjoy that.
The height of the hot.
Yeah.
You're asking me.
Let's do this at 12 or 1 when it's the hottest time of the day. No, thank you. No, thank you.
And even with all of my sunscreen, I still got burnt the 1 year I went. I'm my own reflector. I will say I'm very excited this year. So normally the last 2 years I've missed it, but normally I've talked about this before. My dad and mom will get music festival tickets for the Hangout Festival in Gulf Shores, Alabama.
Yeah.
And then I'll go and sit on the beach and send my parents off to their music festival.
So fun.
Yeah, it's been like an annual thing. And it's most of the time, it's just been the three of us. But every once in a while, like other family members will join. And it's really super fun.
Nice.
Well, my parents just had their 50th anniversary in December. So because of that, we're going to be going back to Gulf Shores, not for the Hangout Festival, but to spend a nice week long vacation with not all of the family, but my brother's family, me and my parents, to celebrate their 50th. The problem is normally it's in May, which is kind of the perfect time.
Yeah, right before it gets real crazy.
Exactly. So it's going to be the first week in June, which isn't terrible, but it is definitely going to be hotter. It's definitely going to be a little more crowded. So we'll see how it goes. But they usually, what we'll usually do is get a beach house on Fort Morgan, which is a peninsula. So because it's a peninsula and because it's further out from like the big public beaches that everyone wants to go to, it is a little bit more private. I mean, there's still definitely people there, but these are all like private houses and their own beach space.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. So, yeah. So even taking it, like, I'll take a walk up and down the beach and you'll run into, you know, dozens of people, but it's not like a big crowd of people on a public beach.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is my nightmare.
Same.
Yeah.
Same. Yeah. I just decided so that like day after my birthday is Mother's Day. That's a whole thing for me.
Yeah.
And so, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to the Hamptons because I've been here like a very long time and I've never been. So, and it's when it's still chilly, so I can wear jeans and a sweatshirt and sit on the beach.
And a sun hat.
Yeah. And guess what? Hardly anyone's going to be there because I'm going to go on like a Monday and it's still chilly. Like, that's how I like it. Right. Yeah. No heat, you know, nobody, no people. And it's going to be great. And I'll probably have one other beach time because in the summer to visit my sister and bring a couple of the kiddos. But
nice.
I just.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
When I was in Wicked, we went to San Francisco. We were there for part of the tour and I can't remember the time of year, but I do remember it being on the chilly side. So it probably was like over Christmas or like in that time of year.
Yeah.
But my friend and I went to Alcatraz and then from there went on to Sausalito, and it was the best time to do it because literally no crowds. And like, you could just walk into any storefront and it was fine. You didn't have to wait in lines. The ferry was the easiest thing in the world. It was really lovely.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. I am driving just so I can, like, you know, drive to different little towns and stuff. But yeah, it was like, let's go before, you know, Memorial Day and like prices amp up and there's too many people and I'm miserable and bitter.
Are you staying overnight?
Yeah. So I found like this little Airbnb. It's like it's the studio, which is perfect for me. There were others that were less money that were bigger, but like what I liked about it is that it has like a little very large pond. It looks almost like a lake in the back. And so I was like, great. I want to sit by the water and eat takeout. And have coffee, and then, you know, it's like gated, it's super secluded.
Nice.
So I'll drive out and, you know, go amongst the people, but early enough that there are very few people because I'm an introvert and I don't want a whole lot.
That sounds nice.
Yeah,
that'll be a good birthday.
Yeah, yeah, it will. It totally will. So oh, Lord. Okay. Well, we should get to our little show.
Mine's pretty short and sweet. So that was a good little intro for it.
Yeah.
So I'm doing the show Lucky Stiff. It's a little bit of a departure from what we normally do, only because Lucky Stiff never actually made it to Broadway, which I guess would put it firmly in the category of a flop.
Yeah.
So as normal, the sources that I have used are Wikipedia, broadway.fandom.com, and there are others I will mention as I go along.
Awesome.
So Lucky Stiff is a musical farce, which was the first collaboration for the team of Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty. Lynn wrote the book and lyrics. Stephen wrote the music.
Patron saints.
Yes, completely. And I'm going to go into some details here because Ahrens and Flaherty have been creating amazing musical theater since 1988. And a sampling of their shows include Once on This Island, one of my favorites, My Favorite Year, Ragtime, Seussical, A Man of No Importance, which is, again, it's just one of those musicals that I love so dearly, Rocky, and Anastasia. They both wrote the music for the film as well as the Broadway show.
Yeah.
They have loads of nominations and awards, including Emmys, Grammys, Academy Awards, Outer Critics Circle Awards. But here is the list of Tonys. So in 1991, they were nominated for Best Book of a Musical and Best Original Score for Once on This Island. And for 1998, they won Best Original Score for Ragtime. Lucky Stiff is based on a 1983 novel called The Man Who Broke the Bank at Monte Carlo by Michael Butterworth. The musical was created and played, and performed at Playwrights Horizons off Broadway in April of 1998. April of 1988. It played 15 performances and it won the Richard Rodgers Award that year. In 1994, it had its British debut at the Royal Theatre Royale. And in 1997, West End hosted a production directed by Stephen Dexter, starring Francis Raphael, Paul Baker, and Tracy Bennett. It was revived for 5 performances as part of the York Theatre's Musicals in Mufti staged concert series in October.
I like York.
I do too. Yeah. That was in October of 2003 with several of the original cast, meaning the Playwrights Horizons cast members, including Mary Testa and Paul Zagnit, and starring Malcolm Getz and Janet Metz, which I thought was hilarious. But it has not at this time been a Broadway production. So that's why it's the departure from what our normal episodic fare is. But I'm hoping that it'll still be enjoyable nonetheless. So the plot of Lucky Stiff is Harry Witherspoon is an Englishman who sells shoes for a living and is tired of his life, wanting some change. He receives a letter saying that his uncle Tony Hendon has died and has left Harry something. When meeting with his uncle's lawyer, Harry also meets his uncle, who is a body in a wheelchair. The lawyer gives Harry his uncle's last will and testament, which reads, Atlantic City, May 5th. Dear nephew Harry, this is my last will and testament. I hope it finds you in better health than it does me. Ha ha! Not kidding, that was written out. Harry, we never met. So I hope you won't be too surprised when you hear the little favor I want. In return for my $6 million, I want to go to Monte Carlo. I want to go to Monte Carlo on vacation. The plans are made. The restaurants are booked. Everything is paid in advance. All you have to do is guard me and this heart-shaped box on my lap with your life. You're probably thinking, impossible, right? A taxidermist friend of mine has fixed me up so no one will notice a thing. Just pass me off as your dear old invalid uncle and follow the instructions on the tape. There's nothing to it. Otherwise, I'll leave it to all of my to my favorite charity, the Universal Dog Home of Brooklyn. So, Harry, what do you say? That's the end of the letter. Harry then agrees to this, although he doesn't know that the box his uncle has contains the $6 million. Meanwhile, in New Jersey, a woman named Rita Laporta sees her brother, Vinny DiRuzio, and tells him that how in the newspaper it says an Englishman inherits $6 million. Rita confesses that she was having an affair and her lover's name was Tony Hendon. He managed her husband's casino and they embezzled $6 million in diamonds in a heart-shaped box.
Oh,
I know. Love it. She saw a woman leaving his apartment and she was enraged and went up to him and shot him dead accidentally because she didn't have her glasses, which annoys her brother, who is an eye doctor. She pleads with Vinny that he has to go to Monte Carlo to find this man and how he needs to she needs to come too. Oh, I'm sorry. She's going to go to Monte Carlo to find this guy and Vinny has to come too.
Okay.
He asks why. She tells him that her husband, Nikki, questioned her, but she didn't know what to do. The money was gone and Nikki caught on. And so she blamed it on Vinny. And now Nikki may have a contract on his life, on Vinny, the brother's life. And please forgive me. The way that I'm reading this is very musical because it's basically the lyrics of one of the songs. As I'm reading it, I'm also singing it in my head. So while in Monte Carlo, Harry meets Annabelle Glick, who represents the Universal Dog Home of Brooklyn. She informs him that she is up to follow him and to make sure that Tony's will is followed. And if one slip up happens at all, the money will immediately go to the dogs. And one of the things that it's not mentioned here is that Harry absolutely hates dogs. So I'm sorry, Harry, I can't get behind you.
Yeah, me neither.
So Harry is followed by Annabelle all the way to Monte Carlo, all the way to the casino, redefines them. And act one ends with a gun pointed straight at Harry Witherspoon. So I didn't actually write down act two for some reason, or maybe it's just missing. So I'm going to do it from memory. And okay. It's not going to be the full version because basically it's a farce. So you've got lots of slamming doors and lots of missed connections and lots of not knowing who people are in their various ways. But
right
at the end of the play, at the end of the musical, Rita discovers that Tony is actually not dead, that he is the guy in the wheelchair, but he's not dead and he's not taxidermied. They take the $6 million and go off together to live happily ever after. I am not sure what happens with Vinny, the brother.
So the uncle lied? He was alive the whole time?
He was alive the whole time. But they had to fake his death because Nikki, Rita's husband, was trying to find out where his $6 million was. So they had to fake his death, but Rita didn't know. Right, exactly. And I think, I can't remember the details on who the woman is that she claimed that she saw leaving Tony's room, which is why she shot him. But it had something to do with faking his death in order to deal with it. But then because she shot him, that was the perfect opportunity. But she didn't actually kill him when she shot him. She just thought she did because she didn't have her glasses on.
I love a crime with a, you know, I love a crime story with a twist ending.
It's so fun. And it's so like 1950s, you know, like the Christie musical. It's very fun. And then Annabelle Glick, who is the one that's following Harry around for the dogs. Annabelle and Harry fall in love and they go off together. Mm-hmm. So that's a fun one too.
He likes dogs now too, right?
I think he does, but I don't remember what turns the tide. Again, I've not seen this. So all of the information I have in my head is just from listening to the cast recording and reading the libretto. So some of the creatives involved here are Tommy Walsh as the director choreographer. He is also very well accomplished. And in fact, we've spoken about him on this podcast before for his involvement in Rachel Lilly Rosenblum and Don't You Forget It in 1973. To refresh your memories, Tommy made his debut, Broadway debut in Seesaw in 1972, was in the film version of Jesus Christ Superstar as the Apostle Thaddeus and originated the role of Bobby in A Chorus Line. Walsh soon left his dancing career to concentrate on choreography, direction, and musical staging. And those credits include The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, 1940s Radio Hour, A Day in Hollywood, A Night in the Ukraine, Nine, and My Favorite Year. The cast... It, at its origin, included Stephen Stout as Harry, Julie White as Annabelle, Stuart Zagnett. You know what? I said Paul Zagnett earlier. I meant Stuart Zagnett. I'm very, very sorry. As Vinny, Mary Testa as Rita. And in May of 1989, Lucky Stiff was produced at the Olney Theater in Olney, Maryland, starring Evan Pappas as Harry.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It won... So just so we're getting the timeline correct, in 1988 was when this was put on at Playwrights Horizons.
Okay.
1989 was when they brought it to the Olney, and that's when Evan Pappas starred as Harry. It also won the Helen Hayes Award for Best Actor in a Musical then. And then in 1994, so this is 5 years after that, a studio cast recording was produced with Pappas as Harry, Judy Blazer as Annabelle, Jason Gray as Vinny, Mary Testa performing again as Rita, Debbie Shapiro Gravit or Gravit, I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce that, as Dominique, Paul Candle as Luigi, and Patrick Quinn as the Monte Carlo MC. So... Ebony and I were talking before we started this program because some of the information she had found accidentally about Lucky Stiff in a book by Peter Felicia was that it was well received, that it did well. And she
this was Mark Robinson's book.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Musical Misfires.
Okay. So she was looking up Lucky Stiff in that book and it just was kind of mentioned along with some other musicals that had also done well. So she asked me, are you sure that this was a flop? And I can guarantee that it was a flop because it didn't make it past those basically 15 performances plus five performances, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Over a 5 year period. Mm-hmm. But it was really critiques by the critics that were the nonplussed ones. Everybody else, I think audience members really loved it.
Yeah.
It was well received for what it was. But, and I'll give you an example here from the New York Times. So April 27th, 1988 was when this was written. It says, given the musical's playful ambitions, one would love to report that Lucky Stiff yielded as many howls as its unseen canine core does. It doesn't. Farce, with or without an overlay of crime, is murder to write. And not without reason has musical farce been almost extinct since Mr. Sondheim and his collaborators triumphed with Forum. But the authors of Lucky Stiff, Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty, should be cherished both for their promise and for their willingness to embrace old-style musical comedy silliness and romance without apologies. Though teetering between the uneven and the exasperating, Lucky Stiff is the work of writers who, with seasoning and much tougher editing and direction, might give their generation its own Bells Are Ringing or Pajama Game. Now, that is spot on, because they did.
Yeah.
They gave us in spades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did.
But I also kind of understand what this critic was saying. You know, he's saying it's a difficult genre to write. And when you get it right, you get it right. And when you get it wrong, it is horrible. Mm-hmm. So and he's not saying that it's horrible. He's saying that it just didn't land.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a little bit disappointing. And I think that's maybe why it wasn't really able to get its feet and move to a bigger venue.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was a movie that was made in 2015 and it had a very similar reception. It was panned, but unlike the show, it was panned by audience and critics alike. I have not seen it, but the trailer.
This is the first time I heard of it. Lucky Stiff from 2015.
Yeah, I remember when it came out and thinking, I'm super excited to see this. But I do also remember watching the trailer at that time and going, I don't want to see it anymore. If you get a chance, watch the trailer. It's available online. It's not great. It's something, I don't know, you know, it's one of those things where sometimes when you have, like, okay, perfect example. If you've read a book and you love a book and then they make the book into a movie, you're almost always kind of guaranteed to be a little disappointed because you read this book and your experience with this book is in your own mind and your own imagination and your own experiences. And so then when that's translated to a movie version with someone else's interpretation, with someone else's imagination and someone else's, you know, ideas of what it should be and what it should look like, it's just not going to be the same. And so it's a little bit, it's a disappointment to what, you know, and not always. Sometimes, like with Harry Potter movies, I was really impressed with how they did it. And there were some things that disappointed me, but on the whole, I was really pleased with, you know, how those books were translated to the movie screen. In this case, I don't think I would have been at all interested in seeing this movie.
Can I tell you just a little bit about the movie? Cause I'm on its Wikipedia.
Sure.
And there's like a ton of theater people involved in it, which was like really surprising. So it was directed by Christopher Ashley.
Yeah.
And that's the same gentleman who did Come From Away, right?
I believe.
Am I wrong?
I think so. Let me go. I was taking a sip of water. Sorry.
It is him because he was artistic director at La Jolla.
Okay.
As well. So that he directed it. And then the screenplay was by Lynn Ahrens.
Mm-hmm.
And then just to highlight a few theater people that were in it. Nikki M. James was playing Annabelle Glick. Jason Alexander was playing Vinny. Catherine Schindel was playing Dominique. Jane Howdy Shell. I just did something no one can see, but I love her. So I just had to she played Harry's landlady. Cheyenne Jackson was the MC. Jennifer Cody was Mary Alice. Kevin Chamberlain, Fred Mayhew III, Chrissy Whitehead, Miss Coco Blankship. So,
yeah,
you know, you had
it was filled with the talent.
Yeah. That doesn't always, of course, mean it's going to be good, unfortunately.
Yeah.
We've seen a few like that in the past 2 years.
Yeah, no kidding. There might come a day where I watch it, like if I've got a little extra time and I'm like, what do I want?
Maybe we add that to our musical flop movie list.
Perfect. Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good. You know, but like, I guess, and also watching the trailer is like 3 minutes long. So it basically shows you the entire movie.
Yeah.
And also, okay, there's something that musical film does to musical theater comedies where it turns it into something that is far more earnest than it was ever intended to be.
Right. Yeah.
And so like the one song that I was singing earlier when I was telling you the story, it's called Rita's Confession. It's hilarious. It's Mary Testa. I love Mary Testa.
I do too. I
love her so much. She is a bigger woman who was cast in these roles regardless of the way that she presented. And so like, she was like one of those people that I could look at and be like, okay, I can do this. But her, the first line of the song is, I was having an affair. Like that was how, that's how it starts. And Vinny goes, an affair, and his, and my lover's name was Tony Hendon. He managed my husband's casino. He wore a tux. I was crazy. You know, like she's telling all of this stuff. And it's a very conversational and very, very funny. In the trailer, she's just saying all of those things. There's not a song to it. Or maybe there is a song, but it comes later. But like, that's my favorite song of the whole show. And so for you to like break it down into just dialogue, like the whole reason it's funny is because they're singing at each other.
I don't know.
It's just my two cents.
I like, you know, some people who are very talented often have difficulty translating a musical into film. You know, it's not always successful. I mean, that's why, and I don't know if you've seen it yet, but like, to me, so I absolutely loved Tick, Tick, Boom. And
I haven't watched it yet.
You haven't watched it yet.
You got to be ready for it.
And the thing is like, you know, Lin's never directed anything except, you know, like things he did when he was a kid or whatever. And so I think oftentimes, like, the thing is to like find the way in to tell the story that makes sense for this whole other type of this whole other type of medium.
Yeah.
And that's what he did. He was like, okay, but I can't just take that musical and just put it as is on film. I have to find the way in.
Yeah.
And I think oftentimes people struggle with that. Like they can't figure out how to, and if you can't figure out how to do that, it's going to be a tough ride the whole film if you don't figure out the way in.
Well, and farce is already like that. Like if you don't hit the ground running with a farce, if you don't have the audience right from go and you keep that rhythm going, then you, it is interminable.
Yeah.
It is the worst feeling in the world to be a performer in a farce where you haven't captured the audience. It is awful. Oh, it's awful. But it's also less enjoyable for the audience too.
Yeah.
Because to a certain extent, they have to be in that with you, in that rhythm. And if they're not in that rhythm, it's like they're either being pummeled or they're being left behind.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's challenging. And I guess if the critics can be believed, and why wouldn't they be? You know, they're as experienced as anybody in the theater world. You know, if the show already was not quite meeting the parameters of what a farce is and what a farce can be, then moving it to the screen is really only going to put a big old magnifying glass to the things that we're already lacking. Yeah. So I'm just going to finish up with my hot take here.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't recall exactly when I purchased the CD. But I loved the cast recording. I loved it. The premise is hilarious. It's like Weekend at Bernie's meets Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. And I just realized that Weekend at Bernie's needs to become a musical like tomorrow. We need like a whole 1980s movies made into musicals on Broadway. I'm convinced, though, that every 1980s movie would be an amazing musical. Anyway, I digress. My favorite song, as I just mentioned, is called Rita's Confession. Mary Testa as Rita confesses to her optometrist brother that she accidentally shot her lover after stealing $6 million from her husband because she wasn't wearing her glasses. I'm just going to let that land. I'm going to say it again, and I'm going to give it the beat it deserves. She confesses to her optometrist brother that she accidentally shot her lover after stealing $6 million from her husband because she wasn't wearing her glasses. The show is clever and it's pretty, at least so far as the recording portrays, and that critics didn't seem to feel its cleverness transferred to the stages. So sad, in my opinion. I hope that one day it can find its way back on stage, find its audience, and be loved.
But was it never a New York City Center, like off-center production? It's like, sounds like the perfect place for it.
I think so too. The closest it made, like I said, was at the Mufti's.
Okay.
Because I mean, Playwrights Horizons is in New York, but it's not, is it considered off Broadway?
Yes.
Oh, it is. Okay. Well then never mind. It did make it to off Broadway. I just think it's got so much potential. It's got, it's there. It's all there. It is so, it's such a fun show and it's a small cast. Like it doesn't need more than just a proscenium and a stage, like, you know. And I think we've talked about that before. We've gotten so far away from the simplicity of musical theater comedy, and the simplicity of just being able to tell the story with bodies on stage. And I just, like, I think we're so due for that kind of renaissance of musical comedy.
It's funny. I feel like there's some plays that have that feeling, you know, that I've seen, like Chicken and Biscuits has that feeling of like, it's not a musical, but like it could be, you know, it feels like the 39 Steps, like this felt to me a bit like the 39 Steps, which is like also a play, but like,
I'm actually surprised it's not a musical.
Yeah.
Or if it's not, that it's not based on a, like, or there's not a musical out there that's already based on that story. Like, it doesn't seem like,
I'm sure there probably is.
It's been playing for decades.
Yeah. I love the 39 Steps.
Yeah.
So I, it's interesting. There's a few like plays that have that musical sort of quality, but yeah, I feel like, new musicals do not as often have that same farcical, you know, feeling.
Which is fine. Like, that is a whole genre all into it. Like, that is its own little bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy for it to stay that way. Because there is also, my favorite kind of musical are the gothic kind of musicals, the Jekyll and Hyde, and like the ones that are like dark, and there is some humor to them, but like it's all emotion. Like, I love those kind of musicals, but there is also just to go to see a musical that's short and sweet and witty and clever, and you're just smiling and laughing the whole time. Like, there is a place for that. And I love that kind of musical theater as well.
Yeah. I just haven't. And I'm friends, like, please message us if I am dead wrong, but I feel like most of the things that are coming out now are not like that.
Yeah. Well, it is old fashioned. Really, because farce was something that came out in like the 1920s, I think. So it's not unusual that we have moved on to more modern ideas and more modern ways of telling stories.
Mm-hmm.
But if you really consider that theater as a whole came to us hundreds of years ago from people just trying to tell, you know, either their cultural history to other people or within their own culture or, you know, sharing Bible stories from one community to another. Like, that's really where theater started. And that's where we took it from. So there, you know, there is going to be an evolution of this kind of stuff. But I think you're absolutely right in the way that we're telling stories now is very far removed from that kind of pitter patter rhythmic melody that you hear in those older kind of, and this isn't older, this is just based on older musicals, but like that kind of, I'm trying to think of like Little Mary Sunshine, that kind of of musical.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
She's here every week, friends. Come back and listen.
Sometimes I just sit in the Zoom meeting waiting for you to show up.
No, we don't. I'm like, I have no idea what said before I get here when I'm late. Because it's like on automatic record. So I have no idea.
No, I mean, if you watch the video back, it's just me sitting on my phone watching TikToks. Waiting for you to come and visit me.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, man. All right, friends. Well, thank you so much for listening. Yes,
thank you.
Bye. Thank you for listening to our podcast, Theater Geeks Anonymous. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at
TGABWay
and on Facebook at Theater Geeks Anonymous.
And if you want to tell us how much you love us or you have a great story about one of the shows we've talked about, drop us a note at
TGABWay@gmail.com. You can also support us by going to patreon.com/TGABWAY.
Until next time, geeks!
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the SUPs. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, SUPs celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. SUPS has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at supsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.